This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson. Whether you are a writer, illustrator, or inventor, you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. The attorneys at Larson & Larson can help you. For a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They're my lawyers. They should be yours. Well, I have a very special guest today, Jane Friedman. For any writer, if you haven't heard about Jane Friedman, you haven't been doing the right research, because Jane is, well, what can I say? Jane is the go-to person for everything you need to know about publishing and writing and all sorts of wonderful stuff. So, hi, Jane. How are you?
Hello, Patsy. I'm great.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll just remind people that you are the author of Publishing 101, which is a nice long subtitle, The First-Time Author's Guide to Getting Published, Marketing and Promoting Your Book, and Building a Successful Career. Of course, for anyone who has been hanging around writers' meetings and writing blogs, you are also known because you're a professor and of writing and with the University of Virginia, right?
That's right.
And you're just an amazing font of knowledge. That's all we can say. You were, of course, the with the Writer's Digest for many years. You were editorial director and publisher there. And now let's talk about the world of writing. Tell me, I don't even know where to start. You know, with you know so much. What do you think, when you're talking to writers, what's the first question most of them ask you?
How do I get published?
Ah, exactly. And nowadays, of course, the next thing is most people understand the concept now of a writer's platform, which is a very important element of getting published.
Yes, and there tends to be a lot of confusion surrounding platform. What it is, who needs it, how big the platform needs to be to get published. And probably the most important thing writers need to know about platform as they get started is that for fiction authors, you don't necessarily need to build a platform before you finish that first book. For nonfiction authors, it's very different, and you do need a platform. And we can talk about, you know, the details of that as we go. But I think some authors, or unpublished writers in particular, are maybe too consumed with building a platform before they actually have a finished manuscript to sell.
The only thing I will recommend to all writers is that they, at least if they're thinking about writing or starting to write, they should register their domain name. It's real good to have that in advance.
I agree. The author website, or where you're kind of building your online presence, whatever domain that is, it's good to have that in mind, locked in, and ready to go for when you need it.
Exactly. I've only recently started talking to groups of authors, and I, of course, you've been doing it for so many years, and you're so good at it, and you attend so many conferences, and I am only now learning how much fun it is to talk to authors and to be able to, in a small way, for me, and in a large way for you, to help them, encourage them, and to give them, you know, some leads or links to things so that they feel empowered.
Right. There's so much advice and information out there. Much of it is good. It can also be conflicting and that tends to build up a lot of anxiety and confusion. So in all of the things that I write, in all of my talks and presentations, I try to help reduce the anxiety level and point to areas that writers can focus on and take a step-by-step approach and not get too overwhelmed when they're starting out, especially.
Because it is difficult. One, I was at a luncheon recently, and a woman sitting across from me, she said, well, you know, I'm writing, and I've been writing now. She had published, short stories and things in various publications. And she said, but, I mean, I'm writing a book, but that's all I want to do. I don't want to go out there and have to deal with the public or have to deal with people. I just want to write. I said,
Well, I mean, it's okay if you just want to write as soon as you want to publish. Well, the literal definition of to publish is to go public.
Exactly. So. That's what I wanted to. I had to tell her. I said, well, I think there's a little more to it nowadays than that. So, I mean, one likes to think that, you know, Hemingway didn't have to do a platform. He didn't have to do a blog. But, in fact, of course, he did a lot of groundwork for getting himself noticed.
Oh, sure, yeah. I think that's probably one of the most pervasive myths today is that that writers in the past, whether that's Hemingway or if you go even further back in time to Dickens or to others, that there's this idea, oh, well, they didn't have to market and promote. And that's not true. The most successful authors that we know today were dedicated at spreading the word about their work and finding new ways to sell it. There's a great story about Mark Twain who hired people to peddle his book door to door, which was considered very unfashionable at the time. You weren't supposed to sell your book door to door. You were supposed to sell it properly in a bookstore. But he was concerned about having sales success. And so every author has to consider what trade-offs or compromises they're willing to make.
And of course, Dickens found a method to get his books out there by serializing them.
Exactly. And he knew exactly how to work the public to his advantage and to sustain his career.
So it's funny when I've just started talking to authors and I get all of these comments that, you know, I don't know how to do it. I don't know where to start. And of course, one of the things that they always tell writers nowadays is that you should blog. There are some people who I just don't think are going to be good bloggers. They might be good writers, but I'm not sure that they can pull that off on a and blogging is something you have to do on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the advice to blog is well-meaning, and certainly I've been blogging for nearly a decade now, and it's kind of critical to my platform. It's not the right choice for most authors, though, especially fiction authors. And to some extent, children's authors. So it does take incredible consistency, and you have to treat it as kind of an art form unto itself. There's a very particular way that you have to write online in order to get any kind of attention or traffic. So it's both the best advice for building a platform and the worst advice because so few people can do it well.
Well, I have discovered that the romance authors are pretty good at blogging. They're really the best bloggers. I mean, I don't see, John Grisham writing a blog, but the romance authors really make that effort to blog and to. It's beautiful how they compliment each other's books and they really encourage each other through their blogs.
And notice how and when you're talking about their activity is very collaborative in nature, and they're helping each other out. None of them are writing in a vacuum. So I think what happens to many authors who do blog is that no one ever sees the blog, no one ever talks about the blog, they are not in a community. And that's really essential to any kind of blogging practice. You have to have that feeling of community.
And of course, once you start blogging, if you're good at it and you get followers, it can make a big difference in your sales.
Absolutely. And this has proven out for so many authors. It's in the business, we would call a blog content marketing, meaning that this is content that you're putting out for free that is meant to drum up sales of some type of product. For authors, of course, that's a book, but it can be lots of other things as well. You could be blogging and also getting donations or some sort of patronage on the side, or getting people to sign up for email newsletter list, which can then translate into better book sales when you launch.
Now, of course, you've been blogging, as you said, for a decade. You like one of the original bloggers, I think. Did it take you quite a few years to build up an audience?
Of course. I would say it was even a little bit, I wasn't really good at it for at least a solid 2 years. I enjoyed what I was doing and I looked forward to it, but I can't say that I had any success until I was a good 18 months in, because I really didn't know what my voice was as a blogger. I didn't know what I wanted to say, and it took me time to figure that out. And most people by month six, if not month three, they've given up. So you have to be pretty dogged. And
I think that's me, because I wasn't sure what I wanted to say. And you're right that you have to have your voice and know what you want to say to people.
Exactly. It's no different than finding your fiction voice or whatever else you might be writing. It's its own genre.
So, you know, thinking of encouraging writers, and again, as I said, I was just at a writer's conference, and a writer came to me and he said, you know, I keep looking at my Amazon account and I've only sold, I sold three books here and I sold two books there, and it's very depressing. And I said, well, you know, that first of all, probably you shouldn't look. And second of all, you probably have to get out there and push the book.
Every author is different, but I would say celebrate the sales that you see happening and identify how those sales happened to the extent that you can. A lot of people look at those numbers, but they're not doing any kind of meaningful analysis on it to figure out, well, how did I make those sales happen, or were they through Amazon search? Like, I had nothing to do with it. And that way you can better adjust your efforts so that you're working on things that do send people to make a purchase, and you can improve for the next time.
When, you know, of course, in the big publishing world, they have a launch for a book, and that comes out, you know, and it lasts for how long? When a big publisher launches a book, what's the routine?
Well, generally, what most authors don't realize is that that book gets sold to physical bookstores and to other major accounts roughly 6 to 9 months before the book actually is available to the public. So a lot of the marketing and sales strategy that goes into that is done by the time the author is probably thinking about it going on sale. For better or worse, smart authors are working much further in advance. So the publisher, whatever publicity plan they're going to execute has already been settled at least 3 months prior to the launch date, and then they generally work up to 3 months after the launch date in order to get the book moving off store shelves into readers' hands. Those months are critical because they're trying to avoid a lot of returns from the bookstores. For those who don't know, bookstores can return any book at any time for any reason for a full refund. So publishers are really working hard to make sure that wave of returns doesn't happen, or to reduce that wave of returns. And then they have to move on to the next book or the next season of books after that three-month window has passed.
Now, that's of course, for books that have been published primarily well in hardcover or by major publishers, and they go to the bookstores. But when there are, you know, independent authors who launch their books, mm-hmm. they still have to get out there and work the rope line.
Always. And the optimistic way of looking at it for an independent author is that in many cases, you're selling your book predominantly through online retail. And there's no expiration date on your shelf space when you're sitting on Amazon. You can be there indefinitely, for as long as you want to be. No one's going to return your book off that virtual shelf. And so it can be a real long, slow burn. You don't necessarily have to sell all of these copies right out of the gate. You can build momentum over time. So in some ways, you're not as much on the hook as the traditional publisher who has a lot of physical stock and retail investment.
When an author has published by themselves, what is the best format for them to get out there to the public?
Well, I would say a lot depends on the genre or category that you're publishing in, because there are certain demographics and reading preferences that go with each genre or category. So, for instance, romance is predominantly read in ebook form, so you would never want to launch without having an ebook edition. Whereas if you look at children's books, that's still predominantly a print market, and so it would be a bad idea to go to market without a print edition. If I speak really generally, though, you want to have as many editions as possible to increase your sales. And so that usually means a print edition, an ebook edition, and then as time and resource permits, an audio edition as well. That's one of the most interesting growth areas for publishing is digital audio.
Yes, I was talking to several writers who recently had their books turned into audio versions, and they were very pleasantly surprised at their sales. It really helped them.
Yes. The last study I saw showed roughly 20-30% growth in digital audio, digital book growth specifically for major publishers. I don't know what the figure would be for independent authors, but just about everyone you look at who reports anecdotally has seen an increase. And the other big bonus here is that you can sell audiobooks for a higher price. So there's a nice profit there.
When, one of the things that I've suggested to writers when, you know, they've asked me what one of the things they should do is, I think entering contests really helps you to get noticed.
Again, so much depends on the genre or the category, as well as what your overall goals are, where it is that you need to get attention, and if it's going to help you reach kind of the next stage of your growth. With any contest, I always encourage writers to take a look at how past prize winners have fared. Did their fortunes change dramatically before and after the win of the contest? What sort of benefits do the winners get? Not all contests are created alike, so you should be pretty choosy about which ones you enter, especially if there's a significant fee to enter.
Well, I think, of course, having been involved with Writer's Digest for so many years, you guys had marvelous contests.
Right. It was, I feel like we were up to maybe 10 contests by the time that I left. And make no mistake, it was like a profit center for Writer's Digest, as it is for most for-profit companies that run them. The award, when I was first involved with this contest, the award was for the grand prize was meeting with three agents in New York, accompanied by an editor, which happened to be me for one of those years. So that's a pretty marvelous prize, and it's worth the entry fee. Some of the other smaller contests, if you win them, it feels good to win them, but it doesn't necessarily make a huge change in who's going to notice you or how you're going to get published next.
Well, yeah, of course, a Writer's Digest contest has a much greater meaning than other contests. And, of course,
sure.
attending writers' conferences is a wonderful way for writers to get, move themselves ahead, to learn how to move themselves ahead.
Right. I always like to say that it can shorten the learning curve for you, especially if you're trying to understand how the industry works or maybe why your queries are getting rejected or why you're not getting much traction on something that you're trying to get published through the traditional methods. Meeting with agents and editors during some of the pitch sessions or appointments, usually those people are going to be more upfront with you in person, rather than you receiving, let's say, like no response to your submissions or a form response. You can get some real meaningful feedback on the work that you're doing, not to mention all of the other wonderful benefits of conferences.
Well, that brings us to the question that most writers ask, and that's a query letter. I have to take a short break, and as soon as I come back, I want to talk to you about query letters and agents and all of that fun stuff.
Wonderful.
Okay, just hold on.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Jane Friedman, who knows so much about publishing, the publishing world, having been an editor and publisher for Writer's Digest, and now famous for her blogs about writing and all of her courses that are offered online. We'll discuss them later after I talk to Jane a little bit about the subject that is on all writers' minds. It's the query letter. And, my guest last week was Susan Redfern, and she wrote a book called No Ordinary Life. And I asked her, well, what was your query letter? And she said, it was one sentence. Oh, I thought, oh, everybody, you know, all the writers listening just died, like, oh, great, that's it. I can't, it's bad enough to write a whole page, and then I have to come out with just one sentence. This is going to. It's frightening. Now, of course, over the years, I'm sure you've read many, many samples of query letters.
I have, and I do like to say that brevity is your friend in a query. Most people go on for far too long. They explain too much. They feel like, you know, the more they can cram onto the page, the more chance they have at saying something that will attract the agent. But it's the reverse. You want to be seductive with how you state your case, and usually saying less and showing less is to your benefit.
Yeah, what is it? You know, give me an example of the worst query letter you ever read.
Well, I think the query letters that are really, really bad and need to be totally rethought are the ones that tell the story from beginning to end in painstaking detail. So, you know, we were talking about 300 to 400 words, if not 600 or 700. And that's just not what the query is supposed to be. You're supposed to really just give the story premise, you know, an interesting character in a very kind of fascinating situation or struggling with something that kind of makes you sit up and pay attention. You know, when you read little Netflix descriptions or the back cover of a book, just think about about, you know, the 50 or 100 words that it takes to grab your attention. But your only goal with the query is to get the agent to read the manuscript, like to start reading your actual writing, like the whole point where, you know, we're in this situation. So don't get them embroiled in the query. Get them to the work itself.
And talking about agents, it seems to me, although there are fewer publishers, there seem to be more and more agents. Every time I look up, agents, I see the list seems to be growing.
I don't know if that's true or not. Certainly, there are hundreds of agents, and there's no shortage of people that you can query and submit to. I do know that the business has become more difficult for some agents, depending on, you know, what they represent. And there are a lot of people who are kind of shaking up the agenting model a bit, helping authors self-publish or helping them with editing tasks, which normally, you know, that sort of thing used to be pretty frowned on if an agent would charge an author for services like that. But I think because the industry is changing, they've been forced to change too.
And publishers don't edit in the way that they used to.
That's the conventional wisdom. Again, I think it's one of those myths that circulates. I think it's true that editors have a lot more to do and they're more pressed for time and probably have less time to edit. I think it means that they're editing more on their, like when they're at home or on their commute. And it so widely varies. There are always editors who are less hands-on and those who are more hands-on. But it's true that you'll find a fair number of agents who do edits themselves, whether that's for pay or not, in preparation for sending it off to the publisher.
Now, I think it's very important that when you're looking for an agent, you have to learn something about the agent before you send it, your query.
Right. Which, you know, think about the qualities of a good salesperson, because this is the position that you're in as a writer. You're acting as a salesperson. You're pitching your work. So you have to know the needs of the person that you're pitching to. What sort of clients do they typically accept? You should read their website and take a look at the projects they've recently sold. Stalk them a little bit on Twitter or on social media if you can, get a sense of what gets them excited, what they're enthusiastic about. There's, for those who use Twitter, and actually even if you don't, there's a hashtag, MSWL, which stands for Manuscript Wishlist, and agents as well as editors regularly tweet using this hashtag to let authors know what they're looking for. So yeah, every author should do their due diligence, do their homework to find out and make sure that the agent that they're approaching is going to be a good fit for the manuscript.
Okay, what was that hashtag again?
It's MS, which stands for manuscript, uh-huh. MSWL, wish list, so uh-huh. MSWL.
Okay. That's on Twitter.
It's on Twitter, but, well, there are two websites that collect the information from Twitter, so you don't have to go to Twitter. You can just, if you Google manuscript wish list, you'll find the sites that are available.
Okay, that's a very important thing for people to know. I'm not real big on Twitter, but because I found I didn't have enough time in the day to do Twitter. And this is, of course, one of the things that a writer is facing. You have to sort of select which social media works best for you. Mm-hmm. Now, I know romance authors, again, do quite a bit of tweeting. They like Twitter.
They do. The writing and publishing community in general likes Twitter. Media in general likes Twitter. But I would say that the bigger network for most authors is Facebook. So you normally find that authors are active on at least one of those, if not both. Young adult authors usually will take a serious look at Tumblr and Instagram as well.
So there's always something new to learn for a writer, huh?
Always.
Now, when writers ask the question, like, what is a bestseller? How many books is a bestseller? Is that easy to explain, or is it a difficult subject?
It's not difficult as long as you don't want a very concrete number. So the number changes depending on the week we're talking about and what sort of bestseller we're talking about. Most people, when they talk about a best-selling book, they're talking about the New York Times list. The important thing to understand about book publishing is that there's no industry standard for a book to acquire that title. Like in the music industry, you have records that go gold or go platinum, and that's reaching a certain sales threshold that everyone has agreed on. There is no such, rubric in publishing. And the New York Times, the way that you get on that list is a little bit serendipitous. Certainly there are strategies for getting on, but it means that you have to sell in a diversity of channels. It can't generally be just online or just in stores. And the New York Times surveys very particular outlets. And that list is kept secret, so their list can't be gamed as easily. And then depending on the week, you may be up against John Grisham or you might not. So, depending on the competition you're up against and the format of your book, all of these are factors in whether or not you make that list. The number you would have to sell in a week is probably somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 copies. But again, that number can fluctuate wildly depending on current trends. Is it the holiday season? And so on.
When writers are looking for an agent, should they send out more than one query at a time? Should it go to, should they do many?
Mm. Right. I advocate simultaneous submissions, or at least at the start, simultaneous queries, meaning that you're going to send out a query to, let's say, maybe 5 or 10 agents at a time. I recommend going in waves of 5 to 10. And then you wait a little bit, collect some responses, and then send out another wave. I think there's nothing wrong. I think everyone agrees with querying simultaneously, meaning you're just sending out a query letter, maybe a synopsis, maybe a few sample pages. The more difficult question comes into play when you're asked for the manuscript, whether that's a partial manuscript or a full manuscript. Many agents might at that point ask for an exclusive, meaning they want to be the only person reading the manuscript and considering it. And then you have a decision to make of whether or not you'll honor that request. I think life is short and you shouldn't grant exclusives. And also it keeps the pressure on for anyone considering it. But if you do grant an exclusive, 2 to 4 weeks is more than sufficient time. And I wouldn't tie up your manuscript any longer than that.
Oh, that's good advice, because I wasn't sure exactly when you should, make the decision that's long enough.
Right. I 2 weeks, I think, is ideal, whether it's a partial or a full, and hopefully you're not asked for longer than that.
But generally, by the time they ask you for the manuscript, which, by the way, at this point, it should be, writers have to understand, it should be perfect.
As perfect as you can make it.
You can't be halfway done with it. I had one person who was submitting query letters and wasn't actually finished with the book, which is not a good idea.
That's a no-no.
Yeah, because it would be just his luck. That's just the time when they'll say, okay, send me the book, and then you don't have it done.
Right.
And then you're in a very, very bad situation. So that's it's funny how, sometimes we like to think, well, it's going to take them 5 weeks to come back to me. So if I send the query today, in 5 weeks, I'll have the book done. I'm almost done, And
right.
But that's a sort of a dangerous, thing to
very
do.
Very dangerous.
Then you're in an embarrassing situation. So generally speaking, writers, of course, in talking to all the writers that I've spoken to over the past year, from Sue Grafton to, Margaret George and all of these, famous writers, of course, they all say,
the most important thing is just to write, you know, and not to get depressed when you get rejected. I talked to Margaret George last week, and you know when she got her first rejection letter? How old she was?
How old?
Well, you know, Margaret George, of course, is the author of Henry VIII and Elizabeth I, which are brilliant books. She was 10 years old when she got her first official rejection letter from a New York publisher. She sent
That's
it
good.
In, handwritten, and the publisher sent it back and said, well, you have a lot of promise, but you have to learn how to spell. But she took it to heart, and she said, okay, I'll do better on the next submission. And, of course, she never gave up, and her books are, like, now 900 pages long, every one of them. So so that's I think that's the most important thing that a writer has to learn is that, you know, you're going to get rejected. You can send out, you know, 5 query letters and get rejected and 5 query letters. J.K. Rowling's, was rejected 18 times, I think?
It was definitely a high number, and just about any successful writer you speak to will have these incredible stories of rejection, and you really haven't started your career yet unless you've got a few rejections to hang on the wall.
And I was so surprised that Ayn Rand, you know, the Fountainhead, had been rejected so many times. Every time I think about who was reading, because really it's gripping from all, you know, almost the first page. And I was thinking, who read this book? And they just rejected it. In those days, of course, she, you know, sent the whole book. It wasn't a query letter. And I was thinking, who read this book and said, no, we don't want it? Yeah. So that's something that, of course, writers have to learn, and meanwhile, they should probably be able to make income from something else. So, what do you recommend for writers if you know while they're working on their book? What are some other alternatives they can to sort of build themselves up as authors?
Well, it helps to be part of the literary community. That's you know wherever you live in your city, in your region, in your state. To start building a network of people who are your peers and colleagues, other influencers, you know, such as yourself in the writing community, because when your book comes out, whenever that is, even if whether it's 1 year or 10 years, you're going to have developed relationships that are going to be really important to that book's success and to your ability to spread the word. So being seen and recognized as an author in your community and having people associate your name with, oh, this is the person who writes these types of books. It's a very, very beneficial thing for your platform, and you can never really start too early with that. So you should be actively looking at, you know, book signings and readings and writing events or clubs or organizations or conferences in your area and get out and meet people. I know that most writers consider themselves usually more introverted than extroverted, but I don't think it's a great burden. So, you know, think about going to one event a month and starting to become engaged in what's happening.
Exactly. Someone said, I don't remember who, but somebody said, you know, what you should ask yourself every day, what did I do to move myself ahead today? And I suppose that's good in any field, but particularly in writing. And I know Hemingway had a set number of words he had to write every day before he would stop, because it was just a discipline that he imposed on himself, because he said he needed to have this target, or otherwise you know sit down and drink all day, you know. So it's a good thing to set yourself up, you know, for success. Now.
Yeah.
Of course, you have you offer, and you're of course a teacher, and you're teaching what at the university? Digital publishing.
I teach digital media and publishing, so it's looking at publishing through the lens of producing things for online environments.
And does that include serial books?
Well, we don't It would include serialized work, like of the type you might find on Wattpad. My students are currently working on a very specific publishing project, and we don't determine how it will be produced or on what platform or how it will be distributed until we know what type of audience we're trying to reach. So we always do a lot of in-depth work into creating a profile of our target reader, and then we step back from that and say, well, where does our target reader go for information or entertainment? And that's how we decide on what sort of schedule to publish, using what and what kind of platform to use, and how we're going to distribute.
Well, on your, of course, you have a great website. One of the ones filled with more information than any other writer's website. Tell me, you offer courses online, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what do they entail? How long are they? And what do you cover in that series? How many, are there?
Right now, I have my biggest course, like the one that most people would probably be interested in, is something I did with The Great Courses, which is a for-profit continuing education company. And I did a 24-lecture series in partnership with them called How to Publish Your Book. And it covers everything from what you need to know about the industry to writing queries and proposals to learning how to market and promote your book, how to get onto a bestseller list. It also covers self-publishing and digital publishing. So it's really an A to Z coverage of traditional publishing for the most part, with some self-publishing coverage as well. And then off my own site, I offer a course, it's a self-study on how to write a book proposal that's geared for nonfiction authors. And then I run special one-time courses throughout the year with companies like Writer's Digest, and also just hosting myself off my site. I did a social media course last year that I'm going to relaunch again in the fall.
Now, you know, when we're talking about books being published, how often is it just a matter of luck to find an agent, and how often is it just a matter of the query letter getting their attention?
I don't think it's luck. I also don't think it's about knowing someone or having the right connection. I sincerely believe that to get an agent, you need a professional query, and you need to be pitching a book that is seen as marketable in the current environment. So, for instance, if you're writing contemporary, realistic young adult novels, that's something that the industry is actively looking for in publishing. If you're trying to sell a Western, you're going to have more trouble, and there's going to be increased friction in that submissions process because there's not a growing market for Western. There is a market, but it's not a big one. So the process of querying and submitting for your work is not so much luck as what is the marketability of what you have to offer. So authors need to be pretty honest with themselves about what they've got on their hands and if it's going to be saleable.
And now you cover all of this type of information in your course, and tell people your website.
My website is janefriedman.com.
And from the website, they can also sign up for your blog.
That's right.
And I
also run a special paid email newsletter that helps authors stay on top of changes in the industry. It's every other week. It's called The Hot Sheet, and you can find information about it at my website.
Okay. So it's Jane Friedman. That's Jane, and Friedman is spelled Friedman, janefriedman.com. And it's a great website. It's filled with so much information. And a writer can spend a couple of days just reading your website. But it's worthwhile. And I highly recommend, that writers take a look at it, follow your blog, and sign up for your Hot Sheet newsletter, because as I was saying, Jane is the expert in so many of this, and I know that you're speaking at a lot of events. What events are coming up in the near future for you?
Well, next week I'm going to be going to Digital Book World in New York City, which is an industry event. It's not really for authors. And then following that, I'll be at the Geneva Writers Conference in Switzerland.
Oh, wow. That's a nice one.
Yeah. Speaking to expatriate writers for the most part at that event. And there are many, you can actually at my site, I list all the events I'm speaking at and where you can meet me. So I normally go to about 10 to 12 conferences a year.
That's fun. So, as I was saying to all my listeners, it is a wonderful way to network and to learn, to go to these various conferences, and to always check out and find out where Jane's going to be, and if possible, to get to one where Jane is speaking, and you hold workshops at these events, and you know, and really, the most important thing I think that you do, and I know that you do this through all of the different blogs that you write, it's that encouraging writers not to give up.
Yes, I think by and large, getting published is a matter of time and preparedness, and so every writer needs to be persistent and really believe in and enjoy what they're doing so that they can last for the amount of time it takes to get that get to the point where they've hit the market just right with a really high quality work.
Well, thank you so much, Jane, for joining me today. I want to just add that if you know, when you have meet writers and you think they're in, you know, would be interested in coming on the program, I'm always looking for writers who want to talk about what it's meant to them, also to what they've learned from you, so that they can help share it with my listeners, because you know, writers need to do this sharing of knowledge and talking to each other and encouraging each other. And I know that, you know, you've been doing that for 15 years in the business here, and you know, it's so important.
I agree. We should all be very transparent about how we've got to where we are in our career.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, and I want to encourage everyone to go to your site, and just thank you. That's all I can say, because we're very, very grateful for all your knowledge.
Thanks so much, Patsy. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
Okay. Have a nice day. Bye-bye now.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Well, as I was saying, Jane Friedman is the go-to person for when you're interested in how to find an agent. I would suggest you go to her site. Now, if you are in the Bay Area, Tampa Bay Area, and you are a professional writer, we have a group called the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild. And it's a group that you should join if you're a professional nonfiction writer, or if you are hoping to become one. And they've been working together since 1986 and to support the careers of their members. And it's also a great place for traditional authors to learn more about the business of writing. And each month they have interesting speakers who offer advice on everything from publishing to website development to how to grow your career. So go to their website. It's www.bapwg, that stands for Bay Area Professional Writers Guild, or you can just type it in, bapwg.org. And they meet on the fourth Monday at 1 p.m. at Panera's. And it's a fun meeting. As I said, they always have a speaker, and you're sure to find something of interest there. Now, when I was at, I mentioned to Jane that I talked last week to Margaret George. I want you to make sure that if you haven't read her books, you go and buy one of them. I would suggest Henry VIII to start with, and then move on to Mary Queen of Scots, which covers the early years of Queen Elizabeth, and then move to the third book, the Elizabeth I, which is a fantastic book. It's probably one of the best historical novels ever written, and that's by Margaret George. So I would highly recommend you go there. Now, I'm very happy that in a few weeks, well, I've got so many wonderful, wonderful authors coming up, and one of them is C.J. Box, and if you haven't read any of C.J. Box's work, I suggest that you do so soon, because he's got a new book called Off the Grid, which it's an amazing book. It's actually, we always talk about an author's latest book being better than the one before, but the new C.J. Box book, Off the Grid, which is follows his character, Joe Pickett, is really, it's the best one in this series, and he's just been getting better and better, and I'm sure that you'll all enjoy it, and it's going to be coming out, and you must listen to the interview, because he's a fascinating man, and the story, the premise that he writes is so timely and so important, and I know that he wants to share that knowledge with everybody, because that's something that he really cares about, and he worries about the events that he portrays in the book actually happening. So it will be fun to talk to him about this book, and I'm sure that you'll enjoy the interview. And that will be coming up in 2 weeks. And next week, I have so many guests coming on. Next week I have, I can't even think of everybody. I've got so many people coming up. But I want to make sure that on Thursday we have a young writer, Julia Turner, who is a teenager, and she has written a book, and that has been so well received in the market, and has, it's not yet a bestseller, but I think it's moving up there, and that's Julia Turner, and it's called That's Not Hay in My Hair, and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to this interview, because it's so encouraging to see a young person get out there and write and have fun with it, and I'm looking forward. She's actually in high school, and she had to get permission from the principal to take time off to do an interview. So that's on Thursday, coming up at 11 o'clock on Thursday. And meanwhile, I just want to, again, encourage you, if you're looking for a place to do some shopping, to go to the Miami Avenue Wine Bar and Art Gallery. The Art Gallery is fantastic, and they have lots of wonderful things that you will really enjoy to buy. So think about stopping there. That's in Indian Rocks. And this is Patsy with a Z, and asking you to come back and join me on Thursday to talk, to listen to Julia Turner, a teenage writer. And remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it, and have a great week.